Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Tackle Shop Live.
I met you on a sunny day. Right there, you took my breath away. Young and pretty, was it just a dream? The next day,
what's up, Scott Luckoff? You told me I'm your little. How you doing, buddy? Carlisle, how are you, Carlisle? WB Jones is in the house. Well, I know what I feel. Large Mouth IPA. Right on, buddy. Those things are phenomenal. Bronzeback Bassett, how are you doing, man? John Pauls, what do you say, John? Man, oh, man. YouTube user, what's up, buddy? Robert Donahue. Joseph Cascarino, what's up, man? How you doing, Joe? Ed Rudnowski, Kevin Carpenter's here. Matthew Weimer, what's up, buddy? Man, Jimmy Arnold. What's up, brother-in-law? How's everything? Warren Gartrell, how are you, pal? Mike Mahayer, howdy. James Frady's here. Danny Pouts.
You know just what I feel.
Man, oh, man. Tell me I love this way. What's up, Kevin Geezy? How are you doing, buddy? Sam and Sam's here. Mark from Lisa Lake. What's up, Mark? How are you, buddy? Devin Enders. Ray Cruz in the house. Gary Bechtel. Tammy. What's up, Cayuga Tammy? How are you doing? Mike Lott, how are you? Man, we got a great show tonight. Man, we have a bunch of guys. Conway's here. Kyle Johns. David Schottelmeyer, how you doing? Yes, sir, we got a great show for you tonight. Hashtag FBD, baby, fishing boat docks, absolutely. We are going to bust into all that hashtag stuff tonight and talk about boat dock fishing. And it's going to be a fun show for you guys. You know, boat docks are something that you got to kind of get into doing, and we're going to try to help you out with that, so it's all good. My name is Mike Acord, this is George Acord, and behind the camera is cameraman Nick, and we are Tackle Shop Live. We come to you every Thursday night at 7 o'clock, and we appreciate you guys immensely for stopping in and hanging out with us for an hour or so, and talk fishing and tackle shop stuff, which we love to do for sure. We do it all day long and we do it all night long also. So, very excited about that. Don't forget, coming up real quick, April the 19th starts the registration for the SummerSlam tournament event that we put on every year. Susquehanna Fishing Tackle's awesome tournament, the biggest tournament in the Upper Bay region of the Chesapeake Bay. We put on a great tournament for you guys, and it's really cool because it is an everybody wins tournament. Yes, you heard me say that correctly. Everybody's a winner in this tournament. The entry fee is a purchase of Shimano, G. Loomis, Jackal, and Power Pro. Those are our sponsors. You got to spend $250 per boat, and that puts you in the tournament. So essentially, if you go out and you have one of those horrible days, which we all have every now and again, and you don't catch a fish, guess what? You win your tackle back, and you get to keep it, and that's the entry fee. So it's a very unique tournament. It's a very fun tournament. We pay out over $8,000 in cash and prizes, and it is an awesome tournament. Plus, you get the bragging rights of being the King Mac Daddy, and the winner comes on Tackle Shop Live, and we get to interview you and talk to you about what it took to win the tournament. And we've had some great shows with that over the years, so that's going to be a lot of fun also. So thank you guys so much for stopping in. We are going to jump right into the show and get this thing going, and we like to call this Tackle Talk. We We are a tackle shop, and we love to play with tackle, and we have one of the largest tackle boxes around, and we just love it. We absolutely freaking love it. Nick, you love tackle.
I do, and it cracked me up when you said you're one of the biggest tackle boxes around, because isn't that the truth?
Yeah. You know, my deal is, you know, when I go fishing, I put together what they call a Texas tackle box. You know what that is?
I do.
That's, you know, right before I go fishing, I go through the shop, and I get my bag, and I go through, and I pick out the things that I think I want to fish, and I want to try or whatever, and that's my tackle bag for the day, and I take it out, and...
Well, let me ask you something about that, though. Let's say you went fishing like that every week.
Yeah.
Would you be able to find that one that you had from last week for the next week, or would you have to get a whole new one that week?
Well, see, that becomes a problem sometimes, you know, because I leave them laying in the boat, you know, and then I have all this tackle that ends up in the boat in these white bags. I got these white bags scattered throughout the whole entire boat, so... But I'm getting pretty good with it. I know, you know, what I use and what I don't use. But the nice thing about having a big tackle box... And owning a big tackle box is you get to put stuff back.
Well, that's true, but I asked this question because I fished with a guy, and he wanted to do Tuesday nighters every week.
Yeah.
And every week he'd show up with a little brown paper bag.
Yeah.
And you guys probably remember it, but he had to have salty spiders every week.
Oh, yeah.
And the next week he'd have a new bag. And I'm like, well, what did you do with last week's bag? I don't know. So who the hell knows where all his salty spiders were?
Yeah. That's my kind of customer right there. But anyway, George, what do we got today, baby? You know, you're always working with some great stuff, and you always pull out some great tackle. What do you got going on?
I got a few things. I've got some interesting stuff. You know, we're in the peak in our region. We're just starting our peak.
Yeah.
Like swim bait season. I mean, we are prime time swim bait season. I mean, the glide baits are in full effect.
Yeah.
You know, the mag drafts are in full effect. Every kind of swim bait from a, you know, a jig head swim bait that big up to, you know, the biggest thing you want to try to throw. It's prime time. And one of the baits that's getting a ton of play, which actually we went over this bait quite a while ago.
I think when it first came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went over this bait, you know, not quite a while ago, but I don't know, 5-6 months ago. But it's really catching a lot of fish. It's really getting a lot of pop. And it's Shimano Arma Boost. Arma Joint. Sorry, I said Arma Boost. Arma Joint, 3-segmented swim bait. It's technically 7.5 inches long, counting the tail. You know, it's a nice average size glide bait. And this baby has got a lot going for it, which I think is why it's fairly in demand. One is this hinge system here. So what's cool about this is if you've ever had, like, certain glide baits that you throw, no matter how careful you are, they take to tumbling through the air, and it can be challenging for even the best of casters, you know, to avoid, like, a backlash or a bunch of loose loops on the spool or just trying to get your distance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not all. Not all glide baits, but some of them, some of the ones I like to fish with will do that. This right here, this joint right here allows this bait to fold almost in half. So we get a very streamlined, you know, bomb cast. It's a 2-ounce bait. But what's new about it is this is the slow sink version. So they had a slow float version. This one's a little heavier, and it's a slow sink. So you're going to be able to get down into that little bit deeper zone a little bit and keep it there. And just personally speaking, I love the thing. I mean, it comes in a ton of colors. We have, you know, real traditional bait fish colors, you know, with a little flash to them. You can see that flash plate in there.
That's what I think it's all about right there.
That is what they call flash boost. Okay? And that is just a little thin foil plate, little thin foil cutout suspended on a little wire that gets that gives that flash.
Yeah, if you hold
even when you stop it still,
yeah, it just keeps flashing.
Gives you that flash. And the body's got all this scale pattern to it, so it really refracts that light. You know, and it works well with the bait fish colors, you know. You know, you get your little bit of blue in there. My favorite so far is this guy right here. This is BW Shad. That's my favorite. I love tracking that red tail through the water. That's my favorite. And then of course you got to have a good rainbow trout in your swim bait lineup. So check them out. Fantastic hooks. A hook hanger system that holds these hooks back and then allows them to release. Just a really technical little swim bait. Just a great bait. I mean, it's sized right for all fisheries. It's sized right for all, you know, species of bass. It's easy to fish and, yeah.
And easy to cast.
But the important part is to realize is that this is the slow sink version. And I mean, you didn't hear it from me, but the slow sink version is where it's at. Okay. So check it out. Arma Joint slow sink from Shimano. It's called the 190 SS. And you'll notice Shimano in general, guys, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but we've gone over a lot of Shimano baits. You know, the Flash Boost, we've got the, you know, all the World Series, the World Jerk Bait, the World Diver, you know, those things are 100% winners, crush fish. You know, we had that little BT Shad. I mean, they're just what's the Swagey spinner baits. You know, they're just steadily expanding their bait presence. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of your high-end quality baits that we seek are Japanese JDM market, and that's where these are coming from. You know, they have a huge assortment of product that they sell, you know, not in the U.S. and they're slowly but surely bringing that in, you know, bringing in the you know, the more choice, you know, pieces that fit in our fisheries.
I like it. You know, I like that the whole line of Shimano stuff because it's kind of outside the box thinking. It's taking some of the baits that are you know, mainstream and changing them a lot to make them something different. And, you know, the Flash Boost technology is one of those things that, you know, we've seen it with the jerk bait, especially me with the jerk bait, man, that it's just, there's days where that thing just really makes a difference. So, but even their crankbaits, you know, their colors and their body styles and their lips they're different than anything out there. And, I think that's why everybody's kind of gravitating to them and trying them, you know, cause it is a different bait that they can throw that people, maybe the fish haven't seen before for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, in this day and age, you know, we're dealing with a extremely experienced fishing community, be it the bass world, you know, that this show is centered in, mm-hmm. or, you know, we do a lot of saltwater fishing, be it that community, whatever, the Lake Erie walleye fishing community, whatever. The point is, the products that we fish with, you know, have to perform. You know, we're not like taking our hard-earned cash and plunking them down on, you know, just substandard, you know, Temu slash Alibaba junk, knockoff stuff. We, as fishing community, we demand, you know, performance products. And, you know, both domestic, you know, U.S. bait companies and the Japanese, the JDM, you know, the overseas bait companies, you know, for a lot of the better companies, they deliver that, you know. You know, Megabass, Lucky Craft, Nori's, you know, Team Daiwa stuff, Evergreen. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on and on. We're all very familiar with it. You know, and Shimano's been doing this for years, but they haven't been bringing it to the U.S., and now they are, and they've been doing it for a few years. And, you know, I mean, we're going to tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly from all the brands. And, you know, like if you take that Shimano line of baits, I mean, we've extensively fished them all, and there's some of them that do some fantastic stuff, like this Arma Joint swim bait, the World Pop, walks a dog like a spook. The World Diver crankbait, you know, it's what I would call like Bill Norman-ish, deep little N. You know, I mean, it's a quality bait. We just haven't had a lot of success with it. I mean, does that diminish the performance of the bait? No, but, you know, it's probably the weakest bait in their line. But all lines have baits, and I'm sure in some part of the country it's a killer. My point is, you know, this brand is growing their presence, as well as, you know, brands like Megabass and Evergreen and Lucky Craft. And, you know, we're going to keep bringing them to you, and we're going to keep breaking them down piece by piece. And most of it's going to be positive reviews because they're good products.
Yeah.
This swim bait is awesome. It's an awesome fish-catching swim bait that clicks off all the boxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's $42. It's not like for a glide bait, that's not out of line. I mean, that's just not out of line. You know, you're going to go from like a River to Sea S-Waver on the low end at $20 to a $60 range, you know, for most glides. Custom stuff, of course, is a whole different cost conversation. That's not even in this vein. But, yeah.
Yeah. Greg Plank, I'm glad you enjoyed the Dang Woody. That thing is awesome, absolutely. And Rick Putnam, I'm sorry, buddy. I am sorry. He is sitting in 36-degree temperature and 6 inches of snow on the ground in the Adirondacks. I apologize for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
that is a choice, though, Rick.
What else you got there, George?
Well, I think you should enlighten people as to your little private comment there with Greg Plank. You know, what is a Dang Woody, and why is it awesome?
Well, if you guys ever get to the shop here, we have a establishment up the road called Square Mile, and we might have been there once or twice for dinner or lunch or something, maybe a cocktail or two. But they make a pit beef sandwich up there, a Baltimore-inspired pit beef sandwich, and it is fantastic. And I had some guys come in the other night, and they were asking about a place to eat. I sent them up the street, get the Dang Woody.
Home run.
And I hope you got the Square Mile wings to go along with that, because that those things are legendary. But that's what that's all about.
Well, I was just wondering.
Yeah, well, you know, guys come from out of town, and they're
you're keeping that a secret.
Before they head home, you know, just ask us about the Dang Woody, and we'll put you on it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Enough about Dang Woodies and whatever else. Wings.
I'm getting hungry. Let's shut her down, Nick. Let's go. Let's roll up the street.
That'll be our post game stop. Stay focused, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Stay focused.
Yeah, I'm out of whack now.
We got a lot of work to do. So, you know, next up, we're going to talk some frogs. You know, frog fishing. I mean,
love me some frog fishing.
If you don't like frog fishing, you might want to change the channel now, because we're about to talk about some frogs.
Well, who was that fella here? I can't find him now.
The zoo dog and the zoo pup. So think Zaraspook. Frog. So we have the tail, like a feathered treble hook, only there's no hook. We have the frog hook, hollow body, soft. We have, you know, the traditional frog type, but not the traditional frog shape. So we have the Zaraspook, all the attributes of a spook that you can put in places where you can't put a spook.
I'm telling you, Nick and I were walking through the show at ICAST. Remember that, Nick? And we stopped dead in our tracks, George, when we saw – they had it. First of all, they had a great display. It was eye level. And we stopped us dead in our tracks. How about it, Nick? It was just absolutely – this just really got me going.
This is nothing new.
No, I know, but it got –
Let's get that straight.
I tell you what, it's the best I've seen, though.
Oh, it's –
It's the best I've seen.
I mean, these guys from
there was a lot of failures out there over the years.
These guys from Snag Proof have taken frog construction up a notch.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of baits that were made for this, but they were a lot of failures out there. Can you remember the name of the solid plastic one?
That was Yum, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that's not.
No, I know. But do you remember the name of it? I don't think it was Yum.
No.
I don't know.
Don't you remember they came in that blue bag and they were stacked in there?
But that's not.
I know, but you're the tackle master. You're supposed to know
this.
That.
That's not this. That's
I stumped him.
You know, the man's had Man's had the ghost and the goblin.
Yeah.
And there was other companies that did this, but this is a reincarnation, but better. This is the pup, the zoo pup. Zoo dog, zoo pup.
Yep.
Okay. Whole bunch of colors. You know, dynamite. Just killer. They also did a zoo pop.
Oh, this is dynamite here.
Okay, so
imagine
now we
chucking
have,
that in a tree.
Now we have a pop R frog.
Throwing that sucker right in a tree, Nick. Back in, skip it up, back up underneath the tree.
I like it.
Good God, get the net.
Comes with a split ring. Zoo pop.
Man.
That's right there.
That's money.
This is some stuff right here.
That's money right
so
there.
So you asked me, Mike, if I remember these from ICAST. Yeah. And I'll never forget it because... The person who was there at the time was none other than the new Bassmaster Classic champ.
Oh, right.
And he was the one that was showing us a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting, and George, you brought up a great point, was this isn't new, but I remember the original versions that came out, they weren't weighted as well as these are.
Well, they definitely thought about
this. Yeah, they really thought it through.
Yeah.
Well,
they probably had some old ghosts and goblins that they were kind of using.
That's right.
You know, I know one of the guys that works there, and he's quite the angler. He's a guide. He's a tournament angler. And he was explaining to me how they solved the problem in some of their frogs of water getting in the frog. You know, they bought Snagproof.
Yeah.
And Snagproof was famous for their inner tube technology, where they had the hook and the hardware in a separate sleeve that was molded on the bottom of the frog. So you couldn't get the water in the frog. And he, you know, my point of my story is this gentleman, his name's Walt. He lives on a lake, Gunnersville. He's got a dock on Gunnersville, and he would just, this thing would just perplex him, and he'd stand out there in that dock for hours upon hours, days after days, and, you know, the problem was solving the water. And he found out, now this frog features this piece, they all do. But he found out, he noticed that when he worked the bait, there's a little bit of slack between the eye and the hook. You know, they're linked together. And that was acting like a siphon and siphoning the water and pulling water into the bait. And he came up with this little flanged collar that they actually machine there. And it actually forces the water back out again if it does get in. So, I mean, it's little things like that. You know, they found out that over a long period of time, the previous ownership's method of painting the baits and actually stamping them, it was getting hard. So they've completely, like, they basically bought the company,
yeah,
threw the whole process away and started over. And, you know, it's a great story because they have, you know, Bobby's Perfect Frog. They have the Fat Frog. It used to be Ish's Fat Frog. Ish? Now, yeah. Look at me, Ish. I'm sorry I haven't said that. I know that's a hot-button topic. It's the Fat Frog. They have, you know, now they have the Zoo Pop, the Zoo Pup, the Zoo Dog, you know, the American Bait Works Company, which bought Snag Proof. They also bought, and I think this is such a great story, because they also bought Scum Frog. And Scum Frog was a family business that was like multi-generations, yeah, you know?
Been around a long time.
Think back to the original Scum Frog.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you couldn't get any more basic of a frog design. And the people had passion that made that. It was Bates. You know, Walt was telling me a story of meeting the family, which I've met. Mike and I have met the family that owns Scum Frog. And we, you know, he was telling us about meeting the people, the women that were making the frogs that have been there forever. And, you know, their passion for it and their technique and you know, these guys brought it back and they reworked it as well. So, you know, they make a ton of frogs under those name, those, you know, those old school names, Scum Frog, Snag Proof. And there's just a ton of them. There's all up. We have a selection of them in here that's just mind boggling. And there's more. So, you know, when you're getting your frog on this year, getting yourself ready, you know, if you want to do something a little different, if you like fishing a spook, if you like fishing a smaller version of a spook, if you like fishing a pop R, and you want to put them where no spook or pop R has gone before, check out the Zoo Pop, Zoo Dog. Yeah. We have a fairly good selection in stock. Not all the colors are in stock. You know, these things take time to make, and they're not overseas mass-produced baits. And that's just the way it is with this company. It's get them when you can. Get them when you can. We have a pretty good amount in stock. They're $8.99, which is a very, I think, low price, reasonable to the point of being underpriced for what they are. So we are excited to bring that bait in, huh?
Oh, big time.
I mean, you know.
Big time.
You know, I like me some frogging.
Mm-hmm. So, guys, know? I got to put you on the spot a little bit. We all like to throw the spook, but we're throwing spook in open water. We have our rods we like to use that with. But with this particular bait, we're probably not throwing in open water. We're throwing in that gnarly stuff so we don't get snagged up. Are you using the same setup? What setup are you changing? How are you changing that a little bit?
I mean, I use two different setups for all my frog fishing. And this is a frog. So, you know, when I'm skipping a frog,
That's important, though, what he said. It is a frog, you know, and you got to realize it has the big frog hooks in it. So that's important to that what he said there. That's important to understand that.
It's real important, you know, and I basically throw like two completely different setups. They're similar, but yet a little different. So to skip a frog on open water, you know, I love to skip a frog on boat docks. I love skipping a frog on overhanging shade banks. I mean, these are just things that keep me going. And I like a medium heavy powered rod for that. It's actually the same rod that I throw my chatterbait on, or that I throw a lot of things on. It's a medium heavy. I use a variety of them. I use a straight up 843 MBR Loomis. I use
7.2 Poison Adrena.
7.2 Adrena, X-Pride, Zodius. This year we fished some different rods with the St. Croix boys, and we were using a 7.1 heavy Mojo, which skipped really well. So, you know, make sure you have a rod that skips well. If you have a big, heavy, stiff frog rod, it doesn't skip well.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to learn how to skip a frog and you're frustrated all the time, you probably have too much rod. You need a rod that loads up a little bit. And it's going to be a really multi-purpose rod. The other thing that's nice about using that rod is it will teach you the proper way to walk a frog. You know, walking a frog is all about having some slack in your line and not overworking it. And the heavier rod, you know, makes it a little more challenging to learn. It's quite doable, obviously. When I get in a slop, Nick, and Mike's pretty similar here too, I use the same rods, but in their heavy version. And, you know, as always, Braid, 65 Power Pro, 8 to 5 gear ratio is very, very important for frog fishing. And, you know, I guess the biggest thing I think these baits are going to open people up to is that frogs don't only go with vegetation. A frog is not strictly a vegetation, grass type deal.
Yeah.
These baits are going to make that more acceptable to a lot of people who don't fish boat docks, cut banks, overhang banks. You know, a frog, you know, you get a big mayfly hatch, you're on a impoundment that has overhanging banks. You skip a frog up underneath those trees that are all laden down with mayflies, you're going to get bit.
Yeah.
And plus you can put a topwater in places where you can't put a topwater.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Doug, I hope you picked up on what George said about, you know, you're struggling with frog fishing and walking the frog to get that side to side nice walking action. Now, that is super, super important to get the walking action. You'll get a ton more bites if you can learn how to walk a frog and make it go like this. And the main thing is to slacken the line.
A little bit.
That's one of the main things, is having enough slack in the line so that your bait has enough slack to go back and forth. And so timing of your reel and your jerking is what you got to work on, and make sure that you're snapping that slack line that's in the water, and you're not pulling the frog, but you're
with your wrist.
Yeah, and you're working your wrist, and you're allowing that slack line to give a little bit so that frog can move. If you're tight, it's only going to go like this. But if you're nice and slack line, you're going to get that nice walk out of it, and you'll be able to walk at frogs. But the timing of it, so it's the hand, you know, hand coordination with, you know, being able to use your wrist and break your wrist and snap your wrist, and then a little bit of quarter turns as you go, a little quarter turn as you go. And you practice that, and you'll become, and you think slack line all the time, and you'll become a much better frog walker. And, you know, even George and I, you know, when we go long periods of time without frogging, it takes us a little bit of time to get our timing down. Everybody, it takes everybody a little bit of time just to get that timing down, that you got the right amount of slack in there. So that'll help you. What else you got, George?
Well, I have some Bassmaster Classic releases from Mega Bass. Every year at Bassmaster Classic, they release a bait color and or multiple bait colors. This year they did a spectacular job. I'm a little biased because I love me some Mega Bass jerk baits, but this color is, to get it exactly technically correct, GP Pro Blue Secret. So I want you to think Northern Secret and Pro Blue Love Child.
Yeah, that
so you got that.
That chartreuse pearl on the bottom, man, is just money. And that thing, all different angles, you get a different look of that thing.
I mean, this bad boy right here.
It is nice. First of all, it's Pro Blue, which is one of their top-selling colors of all time. And then you put that Northern Secret belly on it. Man, super nice.
Really cool. Really cool color. Plus one. 110 plus one, which is this one. See the plus one lip. 110. You know, the standard 110. Which I'm sure you're all aware of. If you don't know what a 110 looks like, you should not be watching this show. And then, of course, the 110 Junior Plus One. Now, obviously, once and done, very limited quantities. We don't even bother putting them on the website because they're going to sell out by the time we get the work done. And, yeah, give us a call here at the shop or stop in.
Yep, call the shop.
And we'll be open at 9 tomorrow. We'll get them shipped out to you. You can come in and get them. And I don't expect them to last through tomorrow. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Pro Blue Surprise. Is that what it's called? Pro Blue Secret.
Secret.
Pro Blue Secret.
Surprise. Where'd you get that?
I don't know. Okay. Now, I learned something today. I learned something today, and I'm going to pass it along to the masses. We're going to give the people what they want, and that is inside information from the highest level of tour bass fishing.
Mm.
And it has to do with these little Damiki rig type baits that we talk about on the forward-facing guys. And so you got your, you name it, fluke style, you know, whatever. We've talked about a bunch of them, and we've talked about them until we were blue in the face. You know, the scented jerk shads.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the scented jerk shad is a big player in that market. And the guys that are fishing highly pressured waters and are catching the big sacks have a dirty little secret about how they're getting the subtle wobble in their bait. You know, you're able to get a certain amount of action in these baits just by working your rod tip. You know, you watch these guys fish these tournaments on TV, and you see the rod manipulation, and you're able to put a certain amount of action on there, but there are some differences. And what I learned today, and I've been wondering about this. I've been wondering about this because solid tip spinning rods have been showing up in very specific models.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a finesse application, but what I was told today by someone who I very much respect. If a lot of people would have told me this, I'd have been like, this ain't no deal. But the tip on these rods are solid. So what I mean by that is you have your blank here, right? Tubular, blank, you know all about this, right? Hollow, you know, how they make the blanks. We've talked about that. But when you get to here, you can see the transition from this to that.
Right there.
This is solid graphite. You can also see how it reacts.
Extra, extra fast.
Okay. Very, very powerful. Very finessey. But this rod right here now, this is a... Where's the power written on here? This is a medium. So this is a medium. This is most definitely not a medium. And therein lies the secret to getting that subtle wobble that, and you're going to start to see more of these rods come out and be properly presented to you. Now, we presented this rod to you a while ago, but we didn't know this. We thought we knew, but we did not know. We knew it had a solid tip. We knew it was marketed towards forward-facing sonar. We think that only a couple people in the company knew. And most people don't know. And this is breaking news. We should have the breaking news music playing right now. Like, you know. So this is the X-Pride. And you gotta really be paying attention on your game when you buy one of these. It's a 610 medium. And the X-Prides are now in the B generation, so they all end in a B. But between the medium and the B is the letter S for solid tip. And you got, if you don't know, look, because you can see it's a different color. Evergreen has it in the Gizmo rod, which is a very big seller for us. Now I think we know why.
Mm-hmm.
Daiwa Steez has it in some of the Daiwa Steez spinning rods. Shimano brought it out in two versions of this X-Pride, and they marketed it at ICAST as a forward-facing rod. I just don't think that anybody there
understood
was able
it.
To tell that story.
Yeah.
That day ends now.
There you have it.
That story's been told.
Breaking news.
And that information was revealed to me today, and I'm just like, you know what? You told the wrong person. Because I'm telling everybody, because we got to give the people what they want.
Cutting-edge technology and information.
I get it, though. How do you get that subtle wobble that you don't always get in your bait? And why are these heavily pressured fisheries, you know, all these guys are able to make the cast, all these guys are able to present the bait, and a couple of these guys consistently destroy the fish mm-hmm. on these heavily clear water pressured fisheries?
Yeah.
And guess what? I was told by a very high-ranking official in the industry today who's dialed in on two continents.
Mm.
And that's what he told me. So, mm-hmm. I don't know how to quite tell that story, but that's how I'm telling it.
Good job, George. Hey, Mike, we need to get one of them breaking news buttons on there.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know he was going to have that. I would have looked for it today. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to, either that or I'm going to have to learn how to, like, you know, play that song.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know. Breaking news.
What's the song?
Well, I mean, it's playing in my head, but I can't really verbalize it that well. So it's just music, you know what I mean?
Or it comes across breaking news.
Yeah, that's good. Well, let me hit the record button.
Yeah, you got to get that dialed in there, man.
Let's record that tonight after the show.
You got to get that dialed in there, right? I feel like we can up our game a little bit with a few of critical sounds, you know, put in. I would go to Anchorman. That's not breaking news. I get it. Your sounds are old, bro. They're old and worn out. I mean, nobody wants to hear that mess. It's totally counterproductive. Now you get some anchor. You get some Ron Burgundy going, right? Huh? Stay classy, San Diego. All right, we're going to work on that.
What else you got? Let's keep rolling.
You know what? I've been getting a lot of run on Bone Vixens. I've been getting a lot of run on these. And my boys at Reaction Innovations have mysteriously resupplied me in Bone Vixens. I mean, there's lots of other cool colors too, but this has been I've been getting a lot of run on those. Somewhere in the world, there's a topwater bite. And, you know, I saw it on the tournament today. Yesterday. I saw some replays of Hank Cherry catching losing a big one on a spook.
Where? At the Georgia?
Lanier.
He fished it too?
Yeah. Well, mostly tour pros did.
Oh.
we're going to talk about this later, but, you know, if you have a bunch of tour pros in between tournaments and you tell them there's a chance to make 300,000 or 100,000 or whatever, depending on how many people show up, they're going to be like, okay.
They're going.
I'll come for your lunch money.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what they do.
Yeah.
And, So, you know, that bite's happening in the Southeast, and it's only a matter of time before everybody's going to want them.
Yeah.
I wanted to share something with everybody. So, you know, I'm pretty partial to the Super Fluke and the Zoom Super Fluke specifically. And I go through some fairly significant quantities in a year's time, which I don't mind. It doesn't bother me one bit.
Bother me.
I mean, I basically can take what a Bass Mafia bag can hold and not be zippered shut and use that twice.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
So, but, you know, I'm also a scented jerk shad guy. But this right here, it's got salt in it and it's got some weight, but it could use a little more weight. And, you know, they got a toad bait, like a frog toad bait. And that also needs some weight on the hook. And not just every hook will work with this plastic, but they came out with one. And we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
It's called the ZWG. So, basically, this is like a pimped out wide gap hook. So, we have a very Z-Man-like keeper. That little red dude right there. We have weights marked on here, an eighth of an ounce. Perfect for fishing a fluke a little deeper or working your toad across the surface. And we have a cool little keeper. And you can rig it up a couple different ways. You know, you can Texas rig it up regular, or you can kind of like reverse engineer it, kind of like that. But ZWG, put a little weight on that and get your fluke properly activated with the scented jerk shad. So I wanted to point that out. When we do our frog show, I'm going to do this hook again, but I'm going to show it to you in their toad. That is freaking money.
Yeah.
the 5.0, eighth ounce in that toad. Oh, my God. That just sits that thing in the water. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that, I don't know. It was just random kind of musings that I've come across in my day-to-day tackle talk here in the shop. And
there you have it.
I made a note in my book, pass that one along.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, so that's our tackle talk segment.
Well, that's great.
I wonder what sounder we're going to get next.
Hey, George, that hook that you just showed, I remember that at ICAST, and that hook is very underrated. Because, like you said, like we all knew some of the limitations with that plastic.
Yeah.
But they always seem to come out with something that goes, hey, we're going to solve your little issue, and we're going to make it that much better.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Oh, yeah, that thing's...
Yeah, I mean, you can't use a screw lock with it.
Yeah.
And very, very few companies make a weighted hook like that. Okay? They all have a screw lock. Right? The geometry of the hook is different. Because, you know, you can screw your screw lock into any bait, and it works great.
Yeah.
Does not work in the TPE type plastics. So we needed this hook for jerk shads. We needed this hook particularly for that toad. That toad they have with that hook, you're not constantly re-rigging. You can catch fish after fish after fish. That little bit of weight sets that thing down. When we get on the frog show, we're gonna go down on that. I mean, we're gonna break that down.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
There we go. All right, let's move on, man. We're gonna keep this thing rolling, and we got another great section we like to call Tournament Talk. All right, George, tell us about this gigantic tournament that there was supposed to be down here in Georgia.
47 boats.
47 boats.
So let's
at $5,000.
Remove the word gigantic.
Yeah, $5,000 a man to get in.
They're calling it like a high-end pot tournament, like a club tournament, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think they'd call that if they got 100 boats, but it's kind of a cool idea. I mean, you know, the idea was popped a year ago by a guy that lives down there that, I don't know, he doesn't like all the jazz going on with forward-facing sonar. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to have a tournament where you can't use forward-facing sonar. You can't use 360. You can't pre-fish. You can't get any information for 15 days before the tournament from anybody. And you will be checked for all these things. Your GPS in your boat cannot have any marks on it that were not generated during the official 4-hour drive through. So you got kind of old school, kind of pure seat of your pants fishing.
And what's cool about that, George, it's so funny where we're at today. Because if you think about it, about 5 years ago, there's a thing that came, it might have been longer than that, a thing called out Major League Fishing. And people couldn't get enough of it because here these guys were with very little electronics. Mm-hmm. They had 15 minutes to drive around and fish just like we all did.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, we're like, now we're spending money on electronics. It's like we couldn't justify ever before. And then this guy's like, you know what? Let's go back to that.
Yeah.
I bet you for some of the pros that did fish it, it is probably a breath of fresh air.
Refreshing. Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say absolutely refreshing.
Well.
They caught him.
Wait a minute.
They caught him, though.
Wait a minute. You didn't need forward-facing in this one anyways. It just so happened to work out that they scheduled this tournament on Lake Lanier, Georgia, during a full moon major spawn cycle. And the top 12 guys at least 10 of them were sight fishing. And the way these guys sight fish is, you know, two 36-volt lithium batteries, trolling motor on as fast as it can possibly go, and let's drive the boat by trolling motor around 8 miles of shoreline and mark 300 bedding fish. Mm-hmm. And guess what you don't need for that? 360 or forward-facing sonar. So I get the whole premise of it, and I think the fall tournament that they're going to have is going to be a truer representation of it, but just like the Bassmasters Classic, this wouldn't have been a forward-facing event anyways. Now, having said that, if I may.
Yeah.
Lake Lanier, Georgia is famous for big spots on brush piles.
Yeah.
And I assure you.
Oh, yeah.
That there was thousands and thousands of big spots on brush piles that would have been.
You could have caught 60 pound of them easy.
Plucked off one by one with forward facing sonar in the hands of a capable angler. Guaranteed. Well,
especially those guys.
Not an argument. Now, yeah. That wouldn't have changed Chris Johnson's approach. That wouldn't have changed.
Yeah, what was his winning weight, though? 60 pounds. 3 days.
I don't know what his winning weight was. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't have changed his 68. Approach. 68.
It wouldn't have changed his approach.
He could have had 168
right, but
pounds.
But somebody with forward facing on brush piles with the spot size of the spots that are in that lake, they could have done 20 plus pounds a day.
You know, that's a great.
Wouldn't have won.
That's a great question, though.
It wouldn't have won.
I thought you said he had 61 or 62 pounds.
I can tell you this much. He had like 48 pounds going into today.
Yeah, he ended up with 68 pounds.
Oh, 68.
Yeah.
But you might as well round up and call 70.
You know, the funny thing is, I'd love to ask him a question. Did he look at this did it change his outlook on this tournament because he did not have the forward-facing? Because
when he went and looked for
Chris
those fish.
Chris Johnson and Corey Johnson talk,
They
are very good at the forward-facing.
Yeah.
So they're also some of the best sight fishermen on planet Earth.
So I wonder how that would have affected them. I don't know. It's a great question.
Though. Yeah.
I would be shocked if those two guys would have changed their game plan. Just like I can tell you Drew Cook wouldn't have changed his game plan, because when you have this Jared Lintner, when you have this perfect storm of moon phase and weather line up, and you get some of the best sight fishermen signed up, they're going sight fishing. Okay? They're going to sight fish. They're only going to stop on the bigs, and that's how they're going to roll. I mean, Chris Johnston and Corey Johnston learned how to sight fish on Lake Ontario, the St. Lawrence River. I know a guy that drew one of them in a BFL years ago, and he basically said, trust me, I'm going to get my fish. I'm going to have 25 pounds, and you're going to win the co-angler side. I'm going to make sure you get your fish. But when I get my fish, you're going to be in no man's land, because I'm going to be running for 30 minutes. I'm going to stop. I'm going to catch a fish, and then I'm going to run for another 30 minutes, and we're going to do about a 250-mile round trip. And this guy's like, okay, and that's exactly how it went down. Johnston finished second or third with 25 or 26 pounds of smallmouth, and this guy finished second or third and didn't even catch a fish for half the day because the boat came off plane. He caught the fish and put the boat on plane. So you got top, you know, elite level sight fishermen. My point is, before we get straight off too far, I like the premise of this tournament, but it wouldn't have mattered on this one. It just so happened to work out coincidentally. It wouldn't have mattered on this one. First place, Chris Johnston. Second place, David Williams. David Williams is a spotted best expert from North Carolina. Sixth place, Corey Johnson. I mean, they paid out $65,000 for first. But, you know, no forward-facing, no info, no 360, no waypoints.
I love that one.
Everything checked. No phone information, no dots on your phone.
Yeah.
No, none of those bullshit games that get played.
I mean, in your guys' opinion, I know my opinion is you are going to know who was the best for those 3 days.
Yeah.
With the terms that you just rolled out.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Well, you know, come on. These guys are the best. Well, you know, they're using, you know, the forward-facing thing, you know, it's kind of got, you know, crazy, you know, totally freaking crazy. But they're, you know, they're the best at what they do. When they have forward-facing, they're the best at forward-facing. When they don't have forward-facing, they're the best at no forward-facing. They know how to catch fish, these guys. These are the best fishermen in the world. And they are – and then put them into conditions like this, which is kind of easy, the easy part of the year fishing. And look out. They're going to show you something. You know, they're going to catch fish. They're going to catch 8-pounders.
Oh, yeah, they did. And, George, another thing for the first tournament for this league, right, do you see a future in that?
Well, they're going to fish another tournament in the fall. The buzz that they generated, they teamed up with Bass 365, iBass 365. They teamed up with a couple of other anglerschannel.com and a couple of other online bass fishing news sources. The buzz that they generated, which obviously is going to all be positive, was great. And the comments that I read by most
pros, fishermen,
anglers who watched, the comments I read by most anglers who watched were not bashing. They were positive. So I think it was win-win. I mean, you know, you get a lot of keyboard warriors on there that just want to just rampage across everything that's being done.
Well, yeah, you're right. But I guess where I was coming from with that, this was $5,000 to get in.
Yeah, that's no joke.
So, I mean, is that just as much as the tour, or is that not as much?
It's 500 less.
So, do you
it's really only one tournament.
Okay.
The tour, you got to sign up for all 10.
That's what I mean. But if this ends up going to, like, 3 or 4 tournaments, it's going to be a big...
Well, if they're, you know, what's going to hurt them is if they put these tournaments, you know, too close to other events where the guys just don't really have the time. There was a big break between the last tournament, you know, which was the Classic, and the next event. And this kind of fell in there where they could, you know, kind of get down there. They could, you know, they weren't rushing around from one to I guarantee you, if it was like, all right, I have to fish this tournament, and then I got to fish another Florida tournament, and then another Florida tournament, and then I got to go be over there for this thing. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
you'll get guys, but they're going to be the you know, the 30 boat fields of, you know, 40 boat pros, maybe that kind of thing. You'll get those type of fields, but
you're not going to draw a ton of locals at $5,000.
No,
but
you're not.
If this guy has, like, he's going to have 2 tournaments this year, right? And he's going to probably count that as a successful year. You know, if he's able to do more next year, it's going to only be because he can work around all the major schedules. Because what's going to happen is
there's not going to be a lot of holes.
You know, there's going to be that break between the Classic and the resumption of the tour season where you can stick a tournament in and draw tour anglers.
Yeah.
Okay, you can stick these tournaments in whenever you want. But if you want to draw tour anglers, you have to look at those multi-week breaks.
And don't think they're going to plaster them right when all the seasons end, because those guys don't want to fish anymore. They're done. They want to go hunting. They're all hunters.
Where's the next one at, George?
I don't even think it's been announced yet.
Oh, okay.
They're gonna want their time off. They're not gonna want to fish after the tournaments are.
It's later in the year. So yeah, I was just popping over my notes here. I mean, Lunker was 8-11. Chris Johnson. First 2 days
That's
of the
a big
tournament,
fish, man. Jeez.
First 2 days of the tournament, Chris Johnson cracked 24 pounds. The second day of the tournament, they had tremendous wind. Today they had tremendous wind, which makes sight fishing very difficult. But that lake is massive, and the pockets, there's just pockets.
Jajillions of them. Do you ever fish it, Nick?
And pockets.
I have not. No.
Yeah. It's like
it's awesome.
It's got, like George said, it's if you look at it real close, it's just, there's pockets, like millions of them, little coves and islands, it's got everything in there.
You can get out of the wind, but the lake's big.
It is a big lake.
And if the wind's blowing in the prevailing direction, it's coming right down the pipeline.
Bassmasters used to have a tournament there almost every year, and a lot of guys would run up the river. Way up the river and fish them spinnerbaits.
So before the lake splits into the two river arms, you got this big open body that, can get pretty sporty. So, the wind in this kind of an event, they can work around, but they still got to run it.
Well, I was thinking of you, George, after the first day, and I didn't get to watch much of anything, but Chris Johnson was obviously winning, and he was talking about what he was catching fish with. And, of course, they were almost practicing while they're fishing because they didn't get practice. Mm-hmm. And he said about the mag draft, and I'm like, oh, George is looking to love that one.
Well, I mean, it's one of the most amazing baits during the spring spawning ritual season that there ever was.
Yeah.
If you can buy into that program and start drinking the Kool-Aid on that, it is amazing. And a lot of those big fish will show themselves on it. You might not catch them, but you'll catch them on a follow-up bait. Now you'll know where they are. So it was pure, no practice, no 360. It was pure. So congratulations to the Touring Anglers Association, the TAA. And
is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Oh, TAA.
Touring Anglers Association.
I was waiting for Mike to get the Alabama Bass Council.
Alabama Bass Council.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that to us, and we enjoyed it, and we're going to follow you in the future and continue to
it was fun
to enjoy your product.
What else you got there, George?
Well, we had some controversy in the industry, in the tournament world, in the last week or two. Perhaps you heard about it. Apparently, Fishing Boat Docks, the hashtag Fishing FBD, Fishing Boat Docks, has caused some situations out there in the world.
Well, let it be told, that's the reason why we're having our show tonight.
On boat docks.
On boat dock fishing.
Apparently the powers to be at MLF have reached their limit with one Worldwide Watson. So they reached out with their gavel and thumped him in the forehead and said, "You shall not fish due to your attitudes and due to your, speaking out against us and not anti-sportsman like behavior and what have you and whatever. None of that matters. The only thing that does matter is, Fishing Boat Docks, hashtag FBD, is a thing now.
Yeah, and, it is.
I like fishing boat docks.
Yeah.
I think Watson's from the Ozarks. And, those lakes, Table Rock, Lake of the Ozarks, those are boat dock and marina lakes. So it's only natural for him to have the hashtag FBD on the side of his boat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, listen, the colors on our original sign at Susquehanna Fishing Tackle were red and yellow. Bright colors, you could see them.
It's a good color, you know, when you put that contrast of the red on the yellow.
Yeah.
Or the yellow on the red.
It sticks out well.
From the road.
It sticks out well. And, you know, if you're going to make a logo.
Translates well.
It's just perfect on a hat, you know. The colors, it's just a great, marketing colors.
My thing is,
what I'm saying. I don't know. I mean, I didn't take it any other way.
I like the colors of the merch. You know, it's going to sell well. It already has. But
yeah,
I really like the fact that someone has, you know, gone to the length they've gone to express their passion for fishing boat docks.
Well, and how important it is to fish boat docks.
And I love fishing boat docks.
We love boat docks.
I have a whole list of notes here. I'd like to go over some boat dock techniques for the spring.
Yeah, and thank God for Worldwide Watson for this bringing this to light for people who maybe don't know about it. Now we have the hashtag FBD, Fish Boat Docks.
I do see a problem with it, though.
Now you can go out and, well, it's going to put a lot more people on our boat docks.
There's going to be a lot of pressure on the boat
docks. There's going to be a lot of people on the boat docks. Well, I don't like that part of it from him, but listen, I'm glad. You know, when you watched him at some of his tournaments, one of his greatest things that he would do was fish the boat docks with the big spoon.
Spoonjacking.
I mean, I loved watching him do that. It was not with just one tournament, but many tournaments where he got in that situation. That's what he did, and you know. So the FBD hashtag FBD, man, it just brings that right to my memory.
For a year now, right? So did you guys ever see anybody getting disqualified or suspended like that for fishing boat docks before?
Well, yeah. If they're in an off-limits area. So if you have like a headquarters type of a situation of like the tournament is a headquarters, and, you know, they say, look, all these boat docks at headquarters are going to be off-limits. This is where we're blasting off from.
Yeah.
This is where we have our headquarters and we do our business.
Yeah.
And these boat dock. Now, you fish those boat docks and continue to fish those boat docks, and the fines mount up, you're going to get banned for fishing those boat docks.
Oh, you get the fine for the first one, and then after that, you know, you're going to get banned. Yeah,
but so. I mean, if in the rest of the lake, you're cool unless it's marked. I believe the rule reads
with a gas dock.
No, I don't think that's a thing anymore.
No.
I think the rule reads if it's marked as off limits by a state or government agency. Where it's clear that you shouldn't be fishing those boat docks. But, like, the headquarters where you blast off from.
Yeah.
So, like, we'll call that the office.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those docks are off limits.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a great point you bring up because we got a tournament coming up soon.
Yeah.
And there are some docks that are off limits.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have.
You can have some problems.
Yeah.
Our tournament is heavy on the FBD because we have a ton of boat docks.
Yeah.
But we are going to have and we try to do an aerial photograph to mark the.
Off limits.
The headquarters area where we don't want our boat docks fished.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not going to fish our boat docks inside that area. And we're going to go over that real clear with you. But
this can happen. If you talk too much about boat docks, you know,
and
you do the wrong thing about the wrong boat docks, things happen and, you know, you can get banned. And that's obviously what happened. And,
well, let me just say this, moving on to.
Yeah, let's get serious.
What I like to call.
Let's get serious.
What do you mean serious?
Let's get serious.
I don't joke around about fishing boat docks.
I know.
I originally, back in the day, bought one power pole because I couldn't afford two power poles because how much I like to fish boat docks, okay?
Yeah, that's true.
One of the most important elements of fishing boat docks, in my opinion, is boat control. And I got to tell you, some days you can just drive up in there and back, you know, spin your trolling motor around and back prop wash all the boat docks and still get bit because it's just one of those days. But most of the time, that is not the case. And I'm a big believer, I don't know about you guys, but before I even get into my techniques and how to choose boat docks, I'm a huge believer in boat positioning and stealth. You know, you'd be slamming lids around in the boat, we're going to have a discussion. You know, you got to be quiet. You got to stalk up in there. The power pole is an amazing, it's one of the areas where I don't like spot lock. That shallow cover like that. Now, some boat docks are deep, okay? We're kind of focusing on pre-spawn boat docks and spawn boat docks that are not going to be deep. But, you know, some deep boat docks, yeah, I can see maybe you're spot locked because your power poles aren't going to hit the bottom. And you're fishing, you know, but we're going to talk about that on a summer show because there's some pretty cool stuff you do, a.k.a. spoonjacking. Mm-hmm. You know, those are suspended fish. You're fishing those a little different, right? But pre-spawn, spawn, you know, shallower docks. And one thing I want to point out, guys, and I know we've talked about this on the show a lot, and I want you to all go back now and think about that infamous channel swing that we talk about and how that channel swing comes in, swings up on that bank, and turns out. Okay? Those pre-spawn fish love those docks where that channel intersects that bank. I remember a show we talked about that, and we talked about the importance of, like, some wood on that, like a lay down or maybe some rock. Well, that's what we got. Mm-hmm. It's just man-made.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, depending on the phase of the spawn, and where we live, it's early, you know, in the spawning rituals. And, you know, so I automatically look at that, especially if I'm on a body of water where there's a lot of boat docks. Because there's only a very small percentage of them that are holding the proper fish because they don't have the right conditions, the rest of them.
Yeah, but that, you know, therein lies the problem. You know, every body of water is different. And that's, I think, where a lot of people struggle with dock fishing is trying to determine what docks are the successful docks, especially if they don't have really good creek channel swings or, you know, or something that really says, okay, that dock's good.
Well, I have some knowledge for that, too.
Well, I know, and I think learning a body of water, you know, you have to determine, you have to figure out really quickly which kind of docks are your best docks.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is, first of all, pre-spawn, we're going to look at that channel swing. Okay, but you know what? There are some areas where you're way off that channel.
Yeah.
And you may have, for some reason, some deeper water that's holding fish there in the winter. So, whatever that could be, I can't really think of a scenario for that right now. But I'm going to use the same principles of focusing on the deeper docks that are adjacent to an area that I identify as a spawning area. And all those docks are is a stopping point along the way. I'm just focused on that whole channel thing because just about everywhere I fish, there's a channel of some sort. Every creek, every river, every lake. You know, most of the deep coves coming into a lake have some sort of a little gut coming through them. So that's, you know, let's break it down to like a starting spot. To get on the right docks, or yeah. to think we're on the right docks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you gotta go fish those docks, and you gotta get the bites. And you know, you can go in there, fish a dock, get the bites, and then you know you got something kind of going. You can try it and test it on another dock. That's the same scenario. If you don't get the bites, you got to keep looking and searching that too.
Well, what I find interesting about boat docks are they're very patternable. Unless you have just a unique boat dock. But, you know, I have many, many times been able to reliably, like, determine are the fish on the deep outside, the shallow inside, and they'll move throughout the day.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And a lot of that's going to have to do with wind direction. Is there a current present? Are we in a nice, like, warming trend period of time? Is the weather stable? But once you find fish on a dock, pay very, very close attention to the next dock. You know, fish the whole next dock. Don't just fish part of it. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to get bit in that same general vicinity. Okay, now, if you're on a lot of docks, if your body of water that you're fishing has a lot of docks, now to give yourself confidence, you're going to fish a percentage game. And the percentage game means I'm going to fish as many docks as I physically have time for, and I'm only going to concentrate on that zone that I got those last two bites on.
Yeah.
And you're just simply playing the numbers.
Right. So you pull up on that dock, and you start out on the deep end of it, and you do your thing, throw your drop shot, throw your jig, throw whatever, crank it, whatever you're doing. You do your thing, and then you fish it back towards the shallow, right? So that's what you're saying. You fish it back towards the shallow, and then somewhere along the line, you get bit. So say the end of your dock is an 8 foot, and because, you know, 8, 10 foot is like a deep dock, you know, for a lot of docks. In a lot of places, you know, we're not talking about, you know cabled docks or anything like that. We're talking about post docks. So 8 to 10 feet are going to be your deep ends, and you start getting bit in that 4 or 5 foot range, or you're getting bit out in the out. So just pay attention. In other words, what it's saying is pay attention to not only the location, not only look at the bank to see if it's a sandy bank at the dock, or if there's some chunk rock running into the water. That's one of the things you want to pay attention to. And then pay attention to the depth. Look at your graph right away and say, okay, that fish came out of 5, 6 feet of water.
Yeah, I think you're going to find, again, most of the time, a zone, an area that you can focus on where you don't have to fish the whole dock. Right. You know, earlier today we were talking about a river where we fish a lot, live and fish, called the Sassafras River, which has a
truckload of
bunch of creeks with a bunch of docks. And to be efficient, we have to get to this point. Now, how you fish them, that's going to vary. So, I mean, I'm not sure there's a proper way to break this down, but, like, in the spring time, I have some search techniques that I like to use. So, I love skipping and fishing a chatterbait on docks, especially when I'm searching, you know, and especially if I can actually get bit doing that. That gives me the knowledge that I should rework that dock a little bit with some slower techniques at some point. So I'm big on skipping a chatterbait on docks in my search mode. I'm big on cranking docks. Now, the problem with cranking docks is getting that crankbait where it needs to be. So there's going to be some limitations there, you know, depending on the clearance and your casting accuracy. Because crankbaits, as we all know, don't skip real well.
No.
And we bust a lot of bills off on docks.
It's not easy to do. It's not, you
it's
know,
effective.
It takes a very, very effective. Yeah. Cranking docks is fast. You can cover a lot of water. You can cover multiple poles in one cast. You can cover, you know, the spans between the poles. You know, you can cover those really quickly. But you got to be a caster. You got to really be able to cast well. Because some of those docks don't have a lot of clearance underneath them, so you got to be able to, you know, roll that cast underneath that dock and get some kind of accuracy out of it. So it takes a little bit. It takes a little bit.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, you can use the dock to aid in the cast. So, you know, it's kind of hard to describe, but you can start your cast under the dock. Get your crankbait to clear that first edge, and then when your line hits that, it pushes that crankbait down and kind of accelerates it a little bit through the dock. So, you know, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but you can get pretty good at it pretty quick. You don't want to hit the dock with the crankbait. You want to hit the dock about 4 feet back on the line behind the crankbait as it's going forward at a pretty aggressive speed. So cranking docks, skipping a chatterbait, which obviously is a great presentation. But in the spring, don't overlook skipping a mag draft. They skip extremely well. They're extremely effective for showing you fish or getting a bite that you may or may not hook into to help kind of break down that dock. Most of the time, you're probably not going to survive the day with a moving bait on all your docks. You're probably going to have a scenario where you can get into your zone, pluck off. I mean, on a really good day, you know, picture this. Pull up on that dock. You've already determined the zone you're going to fish. Pluck off a fish on a chatterbait. That is really good. And then pick up another technique, and my favorites are going to be the jig and the drop shot.
Ah, I don't believe that.
Okay.
What about your shaky head?
I love the shaky head.
You are a shaky head dock master.
I love a shaky head, but I love a jig and a drop shot also. I mean, I have.
Surprising.
Here's the list.
Yes, yeah. I didn't okay. think you would say it in that.
I'm not putting them in any chronological order.
Yeah.
But the jig rules. But
jig is awesome.
So I mean, that would be like a dream day for me. Pull up on a dock, catch a fish on a chatterbait, pick up a jig, catch another fish on that dock, and then move to the next dock.
Well, hit like three or four more poles there, not get a bite
in that zone. In that zone.
Yeah.
I mean, I got two fish off a dock.
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, you'll hear about it, Nick. You'll hear about it, but very seldom do you pull up on a dock, catch 10 fish off a dock. Now, you'll hear about it, and there's magical docks out there, but 2 to 3 fish off a dock is really, that's a really good dock. You know, that's a really good dock. One fish, typical, but 2 to 3 is really good on a dock. So don't expect. Now, it's going to happen. You're going to, you know, George had days, too, where, you know, we got on a dock and you went back at dock. You come off that dock, you had 6 fish. Beautiful, giant fish. It happens, but it's very, very seldom. And a lot of times, you're like George said, you're looking for a quick fish and then maybe 1 or 2 other ones.
Yeah, and legit.
Before you go, what about if, would you come back to that dock?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. So you caught those 3 off that one dock. What would you do, you know, later on in the day?
So I'm definitely coming back. But depending on the type of water I'm on, I might come back multiple times. And let me clarify that. So if I'm on a tidal body of water and I have that really good dock, you know, we all have those magic docks or that particular day we have 3 or 4 docks that are really producing well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be there three or four times.
Yeah.
On a tidal body of water.
Right.
You know, and on a good dock bite, you know, let's define a good dock bite. For me, a good dock bite is like 6-7 docks that I get dialed in on, 10 docks I get dialed in on. I can hit them a couple times each a day and catch, you know, 8-10 fish. That's a great day.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean,
it's just a
great day. Now, obviously, there are days where it's much better than that. You know, and I'm not talking about marinas now. I'm talking about individual boat docks. And, you know, pre-spawn.
Yeah.
And into the spawn time, you know, because you have that 6-8 weeks of just, like, all different types of fish filtering in and out of there. Pre-spawn, post-spawn, you know. So you've got, I mean, the boat dock is perfect for this scenario.
Okay, so let's I don't want to backtrack too far, but I think we should also say this. So what, when you physically look at a boat dock, now not water, but you're physically looking at a boat dock, what makes a really good boat dock?
Well, I like to see, you know, assuming we're on the right kind of water. Okay, so assuming we're on the right area of the body of water, I like to see an older dock.
Mm-hmm.
I like a hard bottom. I'm a sucker for a ladder. And that's probably it. Now, depending on the time of the day, the shade.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. When I'm looking for a really good dock, you know, if I'm looking around and I know that I got this that I'm looking for a certain range of water or whatever, you know, I want an older dock. I want a dock that's maybe broken down underneath it and one built on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, the more cover the better.
I like that.
I like a dock that has like a lot of chunk rock coming into it. And thinking, well, these people really protected their bank. Maybe they protected their post also. They put some rock. So you check for some rock, good solid rock. I like a T dock. I like more posts. You know, I like a lot more post on a dock so that I can get in there and work it a little bit better. You know, and maybe to hold more fish. You know, I like something that has, and a T dock offers a lot of casting targets. Number one, but it also gives you a lot of shade. And it gives you a lot of opportunity to make special casts that somebody else didn't make. You know, a harder cast. Some get to a place where that nobody else can really get to.
Oh, I can tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
So, a little later on in the spawning season, you know, things warm up. It's a little, you know, May. It's nice out. Insect life is robust. We get a lot of spiders. Mm. I like a dock that has a lot of spider webs on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, if there's not a lot of spider webs on it,
and beat to death.
But there's spider webs all around it.
Yeah.
That means a lot of line went through there and cut them spider webs out.
Yeah.
And that dock's been fished hard.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's something to key on.
Or you're fishing along and there's like no spider web, but then there's a spot where there's spider webs and there might be you look at it and it's like, oh, that's a hard cast. Well, that's the cast I want to make. That's where I want to get my bait, you know, and get it in there where nobody else is getting their bait into.
Well, let's face it. If you're gonna become a dock man, you need to get good at skipping. You need to just like quit talking about it. And do something about it, you know, and that means skipping a skirted jig.
Yeah.
Okay. Skipping a skirted jig and putting it where it needs to go.
Well, I will say for the people who want to fish docks and don't have the time to really hone in on their skipping and all that, a tube is a great way to fish a dock too. because you can easily,
yeah,
a lot of people can easily skip a tube.
Plus, it's a great way to learn to skip better.
Exactly.
And it's smart. It's smart that that's a smart thing to say right there, Nick, because, you know, if you don't have that skill and you're working on that skill, of course, we're all working on the skill, get a bait that you can present to those really hard spots. And that's exactly, that's a great thing. A Senko, you can skip a Senko real nice.
Right.
You know, that's a good one. Tammy Greenman's is saying, you know, why older docks? You know, well, older docks, that's a great question. Older docks have a couple things going for them. They're established, they're in the water for a long period of time. So what happens? Things can get caught on them. Tree limbs can get washed into them. Brush piles can be built over time from people picking up their yards and throwing into their docks for a little crappy thing. You know, it hasn't been disturbed by construction in that area, so the bait fish will go in there and feel more. There's more, possibly some more vegetation that grew around that dock because the bottom wasn't disturbed making the docks. So the older the docks, you got a lot of structure other than the poles that can be in there. And that's why we like to fish older docks, you know.
So along that same line, let's say a brand new dock gets built and, you know, it's all nice and looking good. Is it a myth that it takes bass or whatever a certain amount of time to get on that stuff, or have you had experience either way?
I don't think you can label it. One thing about a dock that is interesting is, you know, you'll get algae growth on the dock pilings, which of course attract, you know, little minnows and insects, which of course attracts the whole food cycle. But I mean, given the right circumstances of wind and bait fish present, they can get pushed up on that brand new dock. It's like a fresh tree. You know, I generally don't get too excited about a fresh snapped off tree with green leaves on it laying in the water. I'm going to fish it. I have caught fish off of it, but, you know, that's just the same thing with a new dock. I want a dock that has a little bit of age to it, but I want the right bottom composition under that dock. Because right near that dock, and right near that dock is where my fish are going to spawn. And we need that hard bottom. We need, you know, fish will spawn on docks. They'll spawn on, they like a piling next to them. They like something over their head. A lot of these docks, like Mike said, one of his favorite kind of docks is a new dock built on top of an old dock, a newer dock built on top of an old dock. Well, it's too expensive to pull those old pilings out, so they just drive new pilings down next to them. I've seen bass bedding on top of those old busted off pilings. So, you know, you can have a bass bed in an 8 foot of water on a piling that's 4 feet under the surface. But once we get into our little zone and we start picking that stuff apart, I mean, you got to be creative. You have to be thorough, but you have to be efficient and fast.
Mm-hmm.
But in the spring, you're going to do some stuff that's a little different, right? Because that whole spawn thing is imminent, right? These fish are trying to feed up heavily. You know, pre-spawn, they want to eat. They want to feed heavily. They want to eat as much as they can eat. Cause it's just Mother Nature's way of telling them, look, you know, you gotta get stocked up here. So I think that 1-2 punch of search and then clean up, you know, search, you know, and putting it into real numbers. Like, I'm pretty happy with one bite on a chatterbait, right? I might make 30, 40 casts there and get one bite. I'm pretty happy with that, but I'm going to clean up. I'm going to clean up with my jig. Mike was surprised I didn't mention my shaky head. I'm pretty much going to throw that shaky head at some point.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, it's like any other day, you're going to find a preference to jig, to your shaky head, to your Nico rig.
To your drop shot.
To your drop shot.
Yeah.
And don't forget, a lot of our bodies of water where we live are heavily pressured. So if it's a weekend, it's a nice weekend, and it's May, You're not going to be the only person fishing those docks. I got some really bad news for you.
Yeah.
35 or 40 of your best friends are going to fish them too. But the beauty of it is if you watch them, a lot of them, with their technical ability, they don't have it. Right? So the mechanics, you know,
those
being able to pitch,
yeah, well, those
accurately,
absolutely, those days, those days, those
being able to skip a jig correctly,
those days that George and I, back when we first opened our shop up and we moved into our into one of our stores, we had this area and we would sit in there and just pitch at this little 1-inch round pipe, and we would just, you know, pitch and pitch over lunch hour. You know, we just pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch. We'd go play cards at our bass club meetings and play cards, and we'd have a cup underneath the table that had a hole that you had to pitch through the hole and then back underneath the table and get it into a cup, and then everybody had a $5 bill and a hat, and if you somebody got it in there by the end of the night, you took the pot, you know. And but that what all that was us honing our skills to fish docks. And to be able to fish and cast to places that people aren't going to be casting to. The outside posts are the posts that everybody's hitting. They're the ones that everybody's been casting to. The inside, underneath posts, the posts that are where the water's real close to the top of the dock, where you have to really be able to pitch your jig back in there and make great, awesome casts on every single cast. There's where you're going to catch your fish, you know, once you establish your zones. And then I do want to touch on that again one more time. Covering a lot of water. You know, don't spend an hour on a dock. I mean, it's the worst thing you could possibly do, dock fishing. Speed is of the essence to cover a lot of docks, because there's not some, you know, unless you just have that magical day, but speed is of the essence because you're only going to get so many bites on each dock and you need to cover the water.
Well, that's what we're talking about with identifying that zone. And that zone's going to change from day to day. I mean, I've clearly seen it where the fish were on the first and second piling off the bank.
Yeah.
And
the shallow water.
2 days later, on the same dock, on the end of the dock. So, you know, we first have to, I can't say this enough. You first have to establish the zone. And then you got to believe in that. And then you have the efficiency of numbers of docks. You need to fish a lot of docks. You're not going to come into a creek, fish five docks, and say, well, they're not on the docks today. Well, there might not be on those five docks, but there's 380 more in this creek,
yeah,
or river.
Yeah, that was an arm. You were up an arm. Maybe you need to hit some main lake docks. And then maybe you need to hit docks that are on points, you know, that are, you know, out on the points. Maybe they're docks that are in little small main lake cuts. So you need to establish those docks, and then you need to establish the zone on those docks for that particular day.
Look at the areas where you think you feel very, very confident fish are going to spawn. And then back out from that and start fishing the docks that you come to first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. Usually there's going to be a little deeper water on the bank there. Mm-hmm. It's just usually the way it is. Now, as the spring spawning season progresses and the water warms up and we start getting into that multiple phase of pre-spawn, post-spawn, fish coming and going, water temperatures in the 60s, we're going to change a few things. We're going to add in a buzz bait, and we're going to add in a frog. We're going to continue with the mag draft as our search bait. So we're going to continue with the chatter bait. But we're going to add in a buzz bait, and we're going to add in a frog, because when that is working, particularly the buzz bait, that is like you will not refish the docks. Then it becomes a matter of just hitting as many docks as you possibly can. If they're eating that, if you're getting a bite on a dock, or a bite on every two docks, they're big fish. But you got to be able to skip it. But the good news is, especially if you're learning how to skip, buzzbait skips great. Buzzbait's one of the best skipping baits you can learn with, particularly if you put a tote on it. Take the skirt off, put a tote on. You know, don't use a little baby buzz bait. Use a 3/8 ounce or a 1/2 ounce buzz bait and get to work. Right?
Yeah.
Stay confident. If you're learning, pick a few backlashes. It's not going to be bad.
Good question here. What length rod are you using for that?
Well, I don't like to get too long of a rod. I'm not good at skipping with anything over 7.2. So I'm 7 to 7.2.
Yeah.
You see, I get up in that. I was trying to skip earlier last year with a 7.4. It wasn't pretty.
Wasn't going good.
It wasn't well. It wasn't good.
Look at some of the best skippers in the world and the rods that they have, you know, their names on, you know, 7.7s.
6.8s, 6.9s.
Yeah, 6.9s, you know. So
6.9 to 7.1 is probably the most.
Yeah, that's what you'll see the best skippers, you know, that are known for that type of fishing. That's what you'll see them throwing is a 6.9 to a 7.1, and very seldom are they over that. So
the other nice thing about that, guys, is the same rod kind of does it all. Like, yeah. I fish my mag draft on the same rod I fish my chatterbait on. On the same rod I fish my buzzbait on the same rod I fish my jig on.
Yeah.
So you guys are talking a lot about skipping, and a lot of people are not that good. All you got to do is go down to the flats and you'll see.
Yeah.
What is the most important thing of skipping? If it's the reel, how do you set it up? If it's the rod, what are you looking for? What could make somebody better?
Well, first thing is you don't necessarily have to skip on every dock, you know. But you got to be able to pitch really good. You know, you got to be a fantastic pitcher. The skipping part, so you can get away from the skipping thing. You got to learn how to skip. You do got to do it. And the problem with it is if you don't do it all the time, then it takes a little bit each day to get yourself up to speed on it. But if you're a good pitcher, you know, pitching and using the dock for your pendulum, that's what George was saying. You throw in, you hit the dock with your line, and then you pinch your spool a little bit to get the jig to lift up, and then you release the spool again, and it can shoot back in relatively accurately, and it's a lot easier than skipping. But, you know, your skipping is... It's a learning process, just like pitching, but it's a definite learning process.
And then there's the pitch skip. I think that's easier than just straight skipping. You know, where basically you start off with a pitching motion, super aggressive, and skip the jig.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big believer in learning that skipping technique. You need to be dialed in on your pitching.
Yeah.
And your flipping, particularly your pitching, but. Don't kid yourself.
You got to learn how to do it.
If you're going to be a dock fisherman and you can't skip, you're going to be an all right dock fisherman.
Well, what I'm asking is with your bait cast reel, do you have it looser, tighter? Are you on the
fairly
edge?
Loose?
Fairly loose.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fairly loose.
It's with pitching and skipping, it's all thumb work and lifting your rod. You know, it's a timing of lifting your rod and your thumb. All at the same time. That's why it's so hard, because you got to come in low, and then when the jig hits the water, you're lifting your rod tip as the bait's going out, and you're squeezing and holding, letting it go so that it doesn't backlash, but lifting your rod so that the bait doesn't dig in the water. So you got to lift your rod tip up as it's skipping, and to get it to skip back in there and keep it skipping, you're lifting your rod tip up ever so slightly at a certain pace, and that's why it's so difficult. And, you know, so you're doing like four things all at once. The right speed of the right angle, first of all, the right angle that you're skipping with, your cast has to be the right angle, and then you got to get it going, and then you got to lift and squeeze with your thumb and lift. It's just hard to explain that, but it's going to take a freer spool than you're normally used to, and it's going to come with a lot of loose line. So Georgia, you know, when Georgia, when I fish, I'm not very, I'm all right at it, but I'm not great. So I, about every 10 casts, I do the clean out.
You have to.
I do the clean out. I'm not embarrassed to say it. I do the clean out, and that's throwing out the other side of you can say what you want. I go the other way. I make a bomb cast.
I clean
it out. Maybe pull out a couple strips. Get myself back to free again, and I go 10, 12 casts, and it's like I got to clean out.
I will tell you something.
I got to clean out.
Learning, you know, Nick hit on it with picking something that skips easy. I mean, it's really, really easy to skip a chatterbait and a buzzbait. You can learn really well with that. But if you have the right jig, you know, we've talked about that forever and a day, and we will talk about it again.
Yeah.
If you have the right jig with the right trailer.
Just go buy a jig that says skipping to start out.
Or just an Arky style head, a flatter style head, and a flatter style trailer. But if you have that, it's not that difficult. I will say this, for those of you who are struggling with it a little bit, you're not being aggressive enough, and I'm gonna give you a little pro tip on your learning curve. Spool your reel with mono. Spool your reel with 15-pound mono. It's way more forgiving to learn, you know, to gain a little confidence. And then once you have that day where you're like, you know what? I'm feeling this. Come home, strip half your spool off, and top it off with 15-pound fluorocarbon. I'll give you another tip about when you're getting a little better with your skipping. Stay away from 20-pound fluorocarbon, because 20-pound fluorocarbon is very unforgiving.
Yeah, blows up on you.
I'll give you another tip.
It's heavy.
Get yourself a bottle of, like, the Lewes Reel Magic, the Lewes Reel Line Dressing, whatever they call it, Lewes Reel Magic, whatever. They're silicone-based.
Yeah.
And hit your line in the morning.
I'll give you a tip.
It makes your line behave nicer, and it will really aid in your skipping.
Learn to clean out.
Every 12 casts.
Learn to clean out. You'll be cleaning out. It's freaking difficult as hell I don't know what George said. Difficult as hell to skip.
Now, real wise.
Hardest damn cast you can learn. But it can be done.
Real wise, like, there's companies that make skipping reels, and I'm going to tell you why they're good for skipping is because the spools are shallow and there's less line to backlash. I know it sounds foolish, but it's true.
Yeah.
The deeper the spool, the
easier it is for that backlash to start and go deep quick, right?
Seems like it. I will say this, if you're buying a reel to put on a skipping rod, I mean, I use my regular reel that I pitch with, 8-to-1 ratio, whatever reel it is. You know, I use a whole hodgepodge of reels. But if you're going to buy a reel, I'll tell you reels that I've tested and experienced that I thought skipped really freaking good was the Corrado and SLX 70s. And that Lewes skipping reel skips pretty good.
That thing skips really well.
Now,
I like that.
It doesn't skip any better than a
full-size
200 reel.
It just doesn't blow up.
It doesn't have as much line on it.
It doesn't. You don't get the big giant backlashes as bad.
But it is. It's undeniable. They do skip well.
Yeah.
No doubt. You know, once you can skip with any reel you want. But I found that 70 Corrado MGL, SLX MGL skips.
And 15-pound line.
Skips remarkably well. I mean, you can skip from a, 3/8 ounce finesse jig on up. And it skips remarkably well. So
you can use braid, Doug. Yeah, you can use braid.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't say I would never use it myself.
Yeah, you can.
But if you're like, I'm reading Doug's stuff here and how he's been trying to learn.
Yeah.
And all these questions.
Yeah.
My answer would be if you're asking that question, don't use it, because that braid is the most difficult line to skip with. And when you're good at skipping, braid skips good. But when you're not good at skipping, braid will make you give up skipping. You want to learn skipping and you're struggling with skipping, spool your reel with 15-pound monofilament.
John Snook, the DC reels, they have a skip, a real tight setting on number 4 that is kind of designed for skipping. It's a real tight setting. I never tried it.
I don't like it.
I could tell you this, you can't throw it very far.
I don't like it.
It's very, very heavy braking, but that's what it was designed to do.
I don't care for it for the skip setting.
Yeah.
Now, if you're learning skipping, that may be a good thing.
Might be a perfect training wheel for you.
But if you're a experienced skipper and you go back to that reel, you're not used to that much braking.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to – it probably works great if you learn that way because it does a very good job.
Yeah.
It pulses that spool. It's pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah.
I've already turned it up to that 4 setting, blasting light little lures into the wind.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it's pretty impressive.
It's a lot of braking.
Yeah.
It's a lot of braking.
So, anyways, I had a question I wanted to ask you guys, but it looks like we're going to run out of time here because we got long, as we usually do.
It's always good stuff, though.
And
what do you got? What's the question?
I just want to know, it at us. Spring spawning season, I'm going to paint a picture real quick. Month of May, 60-degree water. You're on docks that fish are going to spawn on. You're on docks that fish are going to stage on to move up maybe in the morning, maybe overnight. You're on docks that post-spawn fish are going to stop on. What's your secret weapon? Your secret weapon, 60-degree water, 62, 65-degree water, multiple stages of the spawn, maybe even fish spawn in there, good docks. What's your secret weapon?
I'll go first.
Go ahead, Wink.
And, you know, it just works. I'm going to throw a drop shot. And it's hard to beat that morning dawn. I'm going to go that way.
That's a good weapon.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure. 6-inch?
Yeah, I'm going to go 6-inch.
Texas rig?
Texas rigged. And I'm going to be locked and loaded. When they hit, they're getting jacked. We're not messing around.
He ain't messing around.
No.
You want to go second or last?
I go second. Quarter ounce shaky head with a 6-inch Strike King, what do they call that, finesse worm?
The perfect plastic,
the perfect KVD. Perfect plastic KVD, green pumpkin, and then I will dip the tail in chartreuse if it's calling for it.
Now, when KVD was here.
Because I think they're going to be like on beds by then at 60.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We got it all.
Yeah.
We got it all going on.
Yeah.
If you remember the setup.
Yeah.
But I have a question. When KVD was here, I noticed that you had a whole entire box of Sharpies. And you and KVD were in the back for a long time. And I this is going to sound funny. Was he autographing the worms themselves for you? Because all these worms were laying out.
Yeah.
Did you have him sign your worms on the flat
bottom? I had him sign everything.
I'm just checking.
I had him sign everything.
All right.
One of these days, I want to make a lot of money.
I'm going to break the internet.
What?
I'm going old school. If Randy Howe's watching, he's going to go, that's my boy. Merthiolate trick worm. This one's a net bait. You can go with the Zoom. You can go with the net bait. I wouldn't go with any other ones.
How are you rigging that baby, George?
I
knew it. I knew you were going to ask that question.
I like a 3-0 hook. And I'm not too bothered by which hook you use. I mean, some people like to use a finesse style flipping hook, I'll get a finesse style flipping hook. Obviously, too small. Some people like a finesse style flipping hook. That's cool. Some people like a regular J hook. That's good. I like an EWG. I like an EWG 3-0, and it's my trick, so I get to talk about my hook. Okay? You like another hook? I couldn't be any happier for you in your life, and I hope, you know, things are going well across the board. Job, family, the whole nine. Do you.
Oh, jeez.
But not me. I'm using this hook right here. But I'm rigging her up, boys. Let's just pretend that's rigged up. And then I'm going up here 12 inches, and I'm putting on a number 7 barrel swivel. Now, again, you may have your favorite way of rigging it. Get a show and tell us about it. But, see, this is my turn, so I'm going with this. Okay? Now, what I'd like to emphasize is I'm going to skip that in underneath the dock. And I want that to sink down along that piling, all right? I'm going to skip it in. I keep my rod up here like this. And I'll follow it down until it disappears. And then I pop this way. I don't twitch like this. I twitch like this. Boom, boom. And that worm comes up, and I let it fall back down again. Then I reel it in, and I cast it to the next piling, or to the, maybe there's a rusted off piling there or something else.
So what's interesting about all three of our choices is usually we would want a power fish.
Yeah.
But each one of us picked a very finesse. But that's because of the conditions.
Well, that's what he said. You know, as soon as he said 60 to 62, I'm thinking, well, there's going to be a lot of.
Now, if I would have said.
Bottom layer.
If I would have said, you know, 60 to 62, same exact day, but, you know, it's raining like a cow pissing on a flat rock and the wind's blowing 25 miles an hour. I ain't doing none of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Just thought that was interesting. And the people that are listening, that's why we chose what we did.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I really like that. We do that on a lot of shows, and I really like it. I think it's cool. So anyways, guys, we ran long, as usual. We covered some awesome stuff tonight. We really appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Hopefully you found the show pretty good. And if you would please take a quick moment out of your life to like, share, I don't even know what y'all are going to do. Just do everything, every option that's there. Do that.
And that was our hashtag FBD moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that was our hashtag FBD moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, I did ask you guys a question earlier, and I want to kind of ask this one more time. So he was literally suspended for a year or more.
He said in his interview when he can go back, and it's like,
December of 26.
Yeah.
But here's my question, because you guys have been watching tournament fishing forever.
Yeah.
Do you remember anybody else getting suspended like that in the history of fishing? Or
well, not suspended, but kicked out forever.
Oh.
There's been guys like that guy who cheated in
But I mean, like, in any of the major, like, Bassmasters.
It was Opens.
Okay, the Opens?
Yeah, that guy cheated, and he was banned from tournament fishing bass, but that's different. That's not this. This is... Nate Wellman.
Wellman.
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is what gets me, is I guess you can say a defamation of character. I guess you can say, negative impact on my business, so it's a... It can be a legal thing, for what he was saying, disparaging remarks on MLF, maybe making MLF look bad. But he's just only saying what everybody else is thinking. Worldwide has a set of kahunas on him that just allow him to say what he wants to say, and he does say them. But a lot of guys are thinking it. But, the other guys aren't suspended.
Well, it's interesting you say that because that's a good point. He thinks he was wronged with a lot of other guys. And the way that you could actually go about it is to have a open discussion with the person he's FBD in boat docks.
Well,
and see what it is.
And you know, if his interview says anything, I don't know. He could just be spewing more BS, but, you know, nobody will sit down with him. Nobody will talk to him about his fines. Nobody will talk to him about anything. You know, nobody in the organization will. So, I mean, I think he probably had his opportunities before because he's always been a very loud, outspoken guy. And he's always, I think I've heard already in the past where he had said things that kind of put him in the hot seat and maybe got fined before. Right? This isn't his first fine, is it, George?
No, he's had one of the reasons they cited for putting a ban on him was because of
multiple
not paying his fines.
Yeah. So
I don't know about that. I'm just saying that Worldwide said that.
Right.
In his video.
Yeah, in other words, he was fined before for this. So he was warned, you know, it was basically, which is a warning. Hey, keep it up, bro, and you're going to be seen as. But, you know, listen, you're allowed to say what you want to say. You're allowed to speak what you want to speak. And it's freedom of speech is absolutely there for him to say it. So you can't go by any of that but you got to also be ready to suck up the consequences if you go too far. And, you know, I think that's what happened. He went a little bit too far. And I think the organization is looking at it. This guy's bashing us, you know, and he's hurting our business. He's hurting our business model.
Which they've already hurt themselves every year.
Which they do, you know, which they've done themselves, you're right. But this guy's out.
I doubt if it was an organizational decision.
No, it was an organizational decision. The president of the organization, you know, the main wheel of the organization got up and said, "Listen, you're not going to bash my stuff at all."
Did you guys take notice when he put a post out saying, you know, he's like owning up to he got suspended? I was looking in the comments section, and some of his cohorts in that fishing group were supporting him. So does that also put them now on?
Yeah, what can you say?
You know what I mean?
Well, what? Who should get fined? You know, who should get all these fines? What about those guys who were caught up in Cayuga? What about those guys? You know, all the other instances that they had. You know, where are their fines? Where are they? Why aren't they banned? You know, from different things. So, I don't know. I could tell you this. They don't. Them two guys, I wouldn't want them in the same room together.
No, that would not go well.
It would not go well. You know, it would not absolutely not go well. And I just don't think they like each other. I think, you know, the boy Duckett is just saying, you're not going to bash my what I'm doing. You know,
and you could see his side too with that.
You're not going to bash what I'm doing. I know if somebody came in and started really hammering me online about my business and you know, how you guys, you know, saying things that really aren't true and are kind of exaggerated, you know, maybe something small happened and it's now exaggerated into something gigantic and really making a dent in my business and making, you know, where I have to really spend money to get back out of that hole, I'm going to go after that guy.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to go after that guy. Yeah. That's, you know, so maybe Duckett's kind of seeing some of that, you know, and he's saying, you know, I'm a businessman.
I think what's screwing him over a little bit is the past couple years where they kept changing the rules and they changed this in the last minute and they changed that. Right. A lot of people kind of are fed up, and this is kind of just
on top. Like I said, Worldwide Watson is saying what a lot of guys are thinking, a lot of guys that won't open their mouth.
Right.
He's saying what a lot of guys want to say, and he's just paying the price for it. Is that fair enough, George?
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy that's gonna say what needs to be said.
Yeah.
And he's willing to take the hit.
And he is. He took the hit.
And I think he's frustrated with the fact that, you know, he's tried, according to him, he's tried to sit down and work things out. Yeah. And
nobody wants to sit down.
It is what it is.
And, you know, he was, and I think because of his character is why he's, you know, being, you know, punished the way he's being punished because of his character. But anyway, okay. Well, thank you guys so much for staying with us tonight. And we appreciate We appreciate it. And as always, we love doing these shows. And until next time, we'll see you on the next Tackle Shop Live.
You took my breath away. A young and pretty, was it just a dream? The next day, you called me up. You told me I'm your little buttercup. You came over and you fell into my arms. Well, I know what I feel. Please tell me your love is real. From just the thought of you. A long blonde hair and your beautiful smile. Your sense of humor makes it all worthwhile. Don't make me wait, it's not a funny game.